got a 50-year-old man in cardiac arrest, and our building just lost power.
All right, give me jumper cables, rubber gloves, 3,000 grams of Solmedrol. Stat.
What are you, MacGyver?
No, I'm the Generalist. Generalist.
Greetings all, this is Vanessa Cardi here for The Generalist, and today I'm joined again by Jake Anderson, and today we are talking about incentive spirometry.
Hey Vanessa, yeah, incentive spirometry may seem like a sort of a random topic, but the idea for the segment actually came from a social media post that Heidi shared with us recently from Dr. Tyler Larson, who's a hospitalist and educator in Los Angeles, California. It basically dispelled the myth that incentive spirometry has any value by itself to prevent post-op pulmonary complications.
Right, and this was published by Dr. Larson and a team as part of the Things We Do for No Reason series, which reviews common practices in hospital medicine with little value to our patients. The series was inspired by the Choosing Wisely campaign and is supported by the Society of Hospital Medicine.
Yeah, it's a fantastic series. And just like this one, many of their segments dispel myths and burst our bubbles about things that we thought we should be doing. But this question of whether incentive spirometry had any value in post-op patients got us wondering about whether it had any value ever, right? So if it's not helpful post-operatively, is there ever a time where it's helpful? And I certainly recommend it to everyone all the time when I'm caring for patients in the hospital, right? It feels so good to be able to do something for them outside of the medicine we're giving them.
I know. I love doing this. I love writing like incentive spirometer at the bedside and, you know, writing out the number of exercises. And I feel like it gives them something to do as well, because it's pretty boring in the hospital. Well, let's dive in to see if it's time that we have to change this routine of ours. So first off, let's make sure we are all on the same page about what incentive spirometry actually is.
Yeah, so incentive spirometers are mechanical devices that were developed to help people take long, deep, and slow breaths in order to increase lung inflation. They are usually like that clear plastic and have a flexible tube with a mouthpiece and then a piston that moves up and down when the user breathes in. You typically encourage patients to try and move the piston as high as possible, doing it in sets of 10 breaths regularly throughout the day. It's kind of like a treadmill for your lungs.
Yeah, and the goal is to really expand the lungs because atelectasis seems to be associated with other more serious complications in people who are in the hospital. So the idea is that the incentive spirometry use will help expand the lungs to prevent this.
Right. Makes total intuitive sense. But like we mentioned, it doesn't seem to help in patients after surgery, which is a clear time when lung volumes might be low, and this could be helpful, right? In fact, two separate Cochrane reviews, one looking at incentive spirometry use after coronary artery bypass surgery, and one looking at use after upper abdominal surgeries, showed a lack of benefit in preventing post-op pulmonary complications.
So it looks to be a waste of time in those post-op scenarios, but what are the other scenarios in which incentive spirometry might play a role?
Yeah, well, so my first thought was, after post-op patients, would people with chest wall trauma or rib fractures be helped? Like I see incentive spirometry as part of routine care in people with significant chest wall injuries that might impair their normal lung expansion. So I'm curious about whether there's any data there.
There's actually surprisingly little data out there, but fortunately there is some. The best available information comes from an RCT published in 2019 that looked at 50 patients with traumatic rib fractures. The mean number of ribs fractured was 4, and the mean age of the patients was 55. They were randomized to either incentive spirometry, in which they were instructed to maintain a sustained maximal inspiration for 3 to 5 seconds before exhalation, and they had to do that 10 times per hour for at least 8 hours a day versus no incentive spirometry.
All right, got it. So 50 patients, not a huge group, but in the spirometry group, there were fewer pulmonary complications, 80% to about 30%, which translates to a number needed to treat of about 2 to prevent a pulmonary complication. The pooled pulmonary complications included things like delayed hemothorax, need for tube thoracostomy, and atelectasis. There are a number of guidelines that use incentive spirometry as a diagnostic and prognostic indicator as well after rib fracture. But as far as therapeutic tool, this is all I could find.
Well, now, what about in those patients with acute respiratory illnesses like pneumonia or COPD exacerbation?
Yeah, I was really hopeful to find something in those groups too. But there's essentially no data in those groups. So it doesn't appear to prevent pneumonia like we were talking about, and we don't really know if it helps once you already have it. Incentive spirometry has also been proposed as part of treatment for COVID-19. I'm sure we've all seen this. or as part of recovery and long COVID, but unfortunately, I couldn't find any published data evaluating incentive spirometry use in this scenario either.
What about its use in chronic lung conditions, like not the COPD exacerbation, but just sort of the day-to-day COPD years?
Yeah, you know, I called it a treadmill for your lungs. So exercise is good. Maybe we can improve the strength of our lungs. There was one tiny RCT that I came across that looked at its use in COPD, so in the chronic experience of COPD. And they enrolled 27 patients with COPD and found that in the 15 patients instructed to use incentive spirometry, their health-related quality of life was higher at 2 months than those on medications alone. They also saw improvements in their blood gases, for what that's worth, but again, a tiny, tiny study.
Yeah, that's a shame that wasn't 2,700 people instead of 27. Right. Were there any other areas of use that you came across?
Oh man, I really had to dig, but there was a publication in the early 90s that showed some benefit in patients with acute chest complications of sickle cell disease, but the benefits were all based on x-ray appearance, so not very exciting and not very patient-oriented. And then another trial was looking at incentive spirometry use after lung resection. So that's a really good argument for a time where expanding the lungs would be important. And no, I guess this isn't surprising by this point. Not even after lung resection does incentive spirometry appear to prevent pulmonary complications.
So it seems like there are many areas where it doesn't appear to be helpful and a lot of areas where we simply have no idea. I think one argument for it would be related to the fact that the harm is very minimal, I'm assuming, right? Like, is there a harm? What are the harms?
Yeah. So using incentive spirometry doesn't seem to put people at risk of like lung injury or like physical complications, which is good. But there is a financial harm that comes with it. And because this is used so universally, there's substantial costs that could be coming at really no benefit to the patients. So one article published in 2018 in the Journal of Inquiry estimated that the annual cost of incentive spirometry is over $1 billion in the U.S., a billion with a B.
Oh my goodness, that is no small price tag.
No.
I'm also thinking about the amount of plastic, too, that we're using up. And I mean, people probably just chuck them when they get home. I'm sure many people don't continue it when they get home once they take it with them from the hospital. So based on that price tag and based on the apparent lack of evidence for this, I'm really questioning all of the time that I've now spent over the last many years counseling people on the use of incentive spirometry. What a drag.
Yeah, I know. I hate to rob us of a tool for sure, but I'm with you. It's probably better to focus our efforts on things that we know do help with lung outcomes, like early mobilization in the hospital, getting people up and out of bed.
Yeah, that makes a lot more sense, I guess. But if anybody wants to do a massive trial with all of the incentive spirometers that are in all of our hospitals, please do it, because then maybe we'll be able to go back to writing that cheerful little order of incentive spirometer at the bedside. Although often it's just at the bedside and the patient's not using it. So maybe that's also why it's not effective. I'd be interested to know if a lot of these studies actually had supervised incentive spirometry, because I've seen patients like sucking on those things as opposed to blowing in. So anyway, a topic for another day. But thank you so much for bringing this to our attention. And thank you to the social media posts that provoked all of this deep dive for you. And we'll look forward to chatting with you again soon, Jake. Thank you.
Talk to you soon.